Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. When comedian and actor Angelina Spicer learned in early 2016 that she suffered from postpartum depression, she was told to check into a psychiatric hospital. Spicer now says that she wasn't fearful or even concerned at the time. She just wanted some rest. Spicer talks about her experience in her stand-up act and is at work on a documentary she hopes will spread awareness about the condition of postpartum depression. She's also headlining the 9th annual Give Mom the Mic benefit for Perinatal Outreach and Encouragement for Moms, or POEM. Go to WOSU.org /all sides for more information. Angelina Spicer joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tanya Fulwider is the Associate Director at Mental Health America of Franklin County and co-founder of POEM. She joins us as well. Welcome back.
Thanks, Anne. Great to be here.
Angelina Spicer, your first reaction, being told you had postpartum depression, what was it?
Relief. I was so happy that I had, like, completely lost my mind, and I was just going through a bad time. I was just relieved that someone could remind me that I'm okay. I just needed some rest.
How did you seek help at that time?
That's usually the number one question that people ask. I sought help through my therapist, who I had been seeing for like the last 6 years prior. So, I always joke around and say, I knew long before I got pregnant that I needed to pay someone to listen to my problems. And luckily, Dr. Carol Olson was there by my side and ushered me through.
What changed that triggered her diagnosis?
It was the intrusive thoughts. And at the time, I didn't know that there was a such thing as an intrusive thought. She didn't even call it that in the moment. She was just worried. And like through the advocacy work that I've been doing and speaking and just bringing awareness and learning myself, I've learned that intrusive thoughts are actually really common for new moms, and it's okay because it's kind of your mind telling you that it's not okay to do these things. You're just a little worried.
Tanya Fulwider, you got into this whole business because of your own experience with postpartum depression.
Yes, 21 years ago.
How does this compare and contrast when we hear Angelina talk mm-hmm. about it? How does it compare and contrast with your experience?
Well, personally, I didn't experience a lot of intrusive thoughts specifically. Mine did look more like traditional depression in the postpartum period. But in the 20 years that I've been working with moms, intrusive thoughts can be so traumatic.
What do we mean by that? Describe it.
Scary thoughts.
Okay.
I like to describe it to moms as your maternal instinct gone into overdrive, and so far into overdrive that not only are you worried about everything, but you're envisioning horrible, awful, scary things happening. And then beyond that, you might be the one in these thoughts that's doing these awful, scary things. And what makes them so scary is that you're very much connected with reality. You know these thoughts aren't right in your mind. You know that, this isn't right. But you're so anxious in the moment that you don't you don't know that completely. You think, am I just like Angelina said, am I losing my mind? And you may be convinced that that's what's happening. So they're just incredibly difficult, but yet common.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about postpartum depression this hour. You just heard from Tanya Fulwider. She's Associate Director of Mental Health America of Franklin County and co-founder of POEM. And also Angelina Spicer. She's comedian, actor, and advocate. She will be headlining the 9th annual Give Mom the Mic benefit this week, featuring her. You can check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/all sides for more information. Angelina, how old was your daughter by the time you all was revealed that you had postpartum depression?
My daughter was 8 months old when I was admitted to a psychiatric unit. I had, tried to muscle through up until then. I tried everything. I tried, exercising. I tried getting back to work because I thought that, the more I returned back to what I love, the stage and performing, that I'd get back to myself. But honestly, it just everything made it worse.
Did people notice the change in your behavior?
My husband definitely noticed the change in my behavior because, you know, our men are usually the first line of defense. They usually are, men are our partners, are with us when we deliver our babies and at home, you know, giving care to our little ones. So he was the first one to notice. And then after that, it was my mom. And, you know, I'd call her on like my daily walk through the grocery store, just trying to get some space between myself and the cries and the responsibilities of motherhood. And she noticed, but because she lives in a different state, she felt helpless.
Was it, you've talked about you could finally get some rest when you were diagnosed and referred to a psychiatric hospital. You thought you were just tired?
No.
Okay.
I did not think I was tired. My therapist noticed that I was drowning. For weeks, she said that she noticed that it wasn't getting better. And the day that I described some of my intrusive thoughts to her, she knew that she needed to come in and have me protect myself. So that was when she admitted me to the psych unit. And it was at that point that I realized, like, ooh, I need some sleep.
Now you're a comedian and this is part of your act. And I mean, motherhood is a funny thing. You know, Give Mom the Mic events have featured comedians in the past. I've emceed, I think, many of the last years, and it's always refreshing and fun just to laugh at these sort of things a lot of us have in common. How did you make that happen for you? How did you work this into your career, Angelina?
It's an ongoing process, to be honest, because, you know, as a comedian, as somebody who, you know, it's my job to find humor in my failures or my mishaps. You know, this was a different kind of beast for me. It was just like, I felt for the first time in my career that I had a burning desire to give my point of view about where I think society has gone wrong in addressing moms. And, you know, it's with humor, thankfully, but it's an arduous process of, you know, many times reliving my own trauma. But when I get to the nugget of the joke and I get that huge laugh, mm-hmm. it's all worth it.
You're working on a documentary, right?
I am. Yes, we just raised $52,000. $244 on Kickstarter as of Saturday.
Okay, congratulations. What is the documentary going to say? What's your message?
The documentary is going to say everything that I did not hear before I got pregnant. We are going to attack this thing with humor, with raw and real moments from my own experience, my own husband, my own therapist, my own mom who was my caregiver. And we're going to break down stigma with humor, like no more triggering, like, you know, traumatic experiences relived. Like, we're going to address it, but in a really palatable, entertaining way that is, my hope, going to be really, truly groundbreaking.
Tanya Fulwider, what is the magic of humor when it comes to this topic?
Oh, it's so important.
In your group therapies,
there are always laughs, and you know the women connect, people connect in so many different ways that you know there's no one way that reaches someone when they're struggling, and sometimes humor can be that one thing that you know. Someone's describing some of the scariest moments in their life, sitting at home in the middle of the night with a new baby. And, you know, the facilitator comments something to find humor in it. and you just see her, you see her shoulders drop, you see her take a breath and realize, okay, yeah, I can laugh at that, because that was really, that was really funny. Yeah, so it's just so important. And I'm so grateful, Angelina.
Yeah, Angelina.
If I could add, I just feel like, you know, especially as a comedian, you know, using humor, especially when it's self-deprecating humor, and using your own experiences to describe, you know, an awkward moment or, you know, traumatic experience. In my case, it just, it allows people to laugh at you and laugh also at themselves because they see that they're not the only one. And that, okay, yeah, maybe this is a little funny. I hadn't thought about it that way. And then they, you know, they feel okay to say, me too. I feel like I've learned in this work, doing this work in the last 18 months, that this is the new Me Too movement. Hmm. When I perform in, you know, comedy clubs all around Los Angeles and around the country, people come up to me, men, women, young women who haven't had children yet, come up to me and say, oh my gosh, you know, that was me, me with the water bottle, me, you know, in the adult diapers, or, oh my God, no one ever told me I needed to eat the prunes before I went into the hospital. Thank you. You know, men say,
I say, nobody tells you about the shoulders. They all talk about the head. They don't talk about the shoulders.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, I just feel like with comedy, everyone's relaxed. People are open to the information, and they're open to laughing at you and themselves. So it creates for a magical place for us to really dig in and address these things.
You know, in so many ways, Angelina, you were so lucky to already have an established relationship with your therapist, whom you trusted and who knew you very well.
I did not realize that that was a blessing at the time, but I'm learning in doing this work. Like, for example, I'm on a speaking tour currently, and it's called The Postpartum Revolution. And obviously, like with the documentary, I'm looking to, like, revolutionize the way we talk, treat, and joke about postpartum depression. But on the speaking tour, I've really learned that people don't know how to get a therapist. People don't know, you know, how their insurance will cover it. And just the very basic things about caring for their mental health. So, you know, in that, I've learned that, wow, the fact that I had a longstanding, trusting relationship with someone, a third party in my life, to come in and rescue me and give me this gift of the psychiatric hospital was truly a blessing.
How did you know that you were better?
Oh, man. I don't know if I'm ever better.
Mm-hmm.
one thing about postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety is that, you know, you've lived the trauma and you hope that it never comes back. So, you know, I continue to care for myself, and, you know, luckily the psych ward has sort of rang the bell for my whole family, and now everyone's kind of ready and on guard to help in any way that they can.
Mm-hmm.
But I initially knew that I was better, I think, once I realized what my triggers were. And the main trigger was my daughter crying. And once I realized that that was a trigger and how to cope with that, which is what I learned in the psych ward, I realized that, okay, there's some light in this, and it won't last forever. Thankfully, my daughter's almost 4 now, and she talks up a storm, and we have conversations.
Uh-huh.
And now we've moved on to whining.
Yeah.
So we're not crying as much, but we are whining. But mama can deal with the whining over the crying any day.
One last question, Angelina. Does it make you fearful of having another child?
Yes. Yes, absolutely makes me fearful, and makes my husband fearful too. In fact, we don't plan on having any other children. You know, I feel like my work in the world is better served educating and helping moms laugh at themselves and what they've been through and laugh with me. But I don't want to have another child.
Angelina Spicer, I look forward to meeting you on Friday. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Angelina Spicer is a comedian. She learned in 2016 that she suffered from postpartum depression. She talks about that in her show. She's headlining the 9th annual Give Mom the Mic benefit for perinatal outreach and encouragement for moms, or PALM. It's part of Mental Health America of Franklin County. So if you want to learn more about that event, you can check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown, and we are the hosts of Snollygoster, WOSU's podcast all about politics in Ohio.
Each week, we chat about what the shrewd politicians at the State House are up to and how national politics affects us here at home.
Find out why listeners have called us a weekly must-listen. For a lighthearted yet in-depth look at Ohio politics, subscribe to Snollygoster wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Nearly 1 in 10 new mothers in the U.S. suffer from postpartum depression. For some, the depression is so acute they struggle to care for their children or consider or attempt to take their own life. Others fail to seek treatment altogether because of the lack of awareness surrounding this often stigmatized condition. We're talking about understanding and treating postpartum depression today. Still with us is Tanya Fulwider. She's Associate Director at Mental Health America of Franklin County and co-founder of Perinatal Outreach and Encouragement for Moms. Or PALM. The 9th annual Give Mom the Mic benefit for PALM is coming up. I'll be there. Hope you'll join us. For more information, check the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Dr. Tamar Gurr is a woman's health expert, professor, and reproductive psychiatrist at Ohio State University's Wexner Medical Center. She joins us now. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Last year you wrote about why some women with postpartum depression don't get help. What are some of the big reasons? Do they even know they have it, is what I would often ask.
Well, there's a few stumbling blocks, and I would say a major one is not being aware that that's what they have. And so sort of thinking like it must be this way for everyone, or I just feel so out of it. It must be the sleep deprivation. It must just be this big transition, and not understanding that what they're going through is outside the norm of what women experience postpartum. And so, you know, 100% of women, or most women, experience some element of sleep deprivation, the hormonal changes, and a lot of the same physiological changes that come with delivery, but not everyone develops postpartum depression. And, you know, we don't talk about it enough. It's like all aspects of our mental health. We simply don't talk about it. So a woman may not realize she has it. Another barrier is fear. So being fearful of being labeled as not being a good mom. If I have that, I must be a bad mom, because good moms don't struggle with this. Good moms are, you know, constantly posting to Facebook or constantly crowing about the latest achievements and milestones. Bad moms are the ones who struggle. And so fear if they come in for medical attention, what if their child gets taken away? What if they get labeled as being crazy? That can be, unfortunately, a major struggling point for moms. And I think that those are some of the major challenges women face, but absolutely not recognizing the symptoms is a problem.
You know, we were talking with Angelina Spicer, the comedian, actor, and advocate, mm-hmm. on this topic, and she happened to have already been in therapy with the same therapist for 6 years when she was diagnosed. And I think, well, what a comfort that was. Somebody who knows you, someone you trust, can make a diagnosis like that, and you're sort of falling into their arms at a certain point. Whereas other people, what do we know about the likelihood that if you suffer from depression, pre-pregnancy, that is that necessarily a postpartum done deal?
It's not. I like to tell my patients that you're not doomed to have postpartum depression or anxiety
if you've
had it before, mm-hmm. but you're absolutely at an increased risk. And I'm of the belief that knowledge is power. So again, you're not doomed to have it. And I've had plenty of patients who have had a history of anxiety and depression who do not go on to have postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety. But you're absolutely at an increased risk. Also, previously, having had postpartum depression previously increases your risk of having it with subsequent pregnancies. And so, again, you're not doomed, and there's many things that I offer patients. But I think it's absolutely important to sort of have your antenna raised, have your support system's antenna raised. If you're in therapy, have your therapist's antenna raised. If you're not, but you've been in there before, I often recommend reestablishing care, because the last thing you want to do when you're suffering from postpartum depression is try to get in with somebody. If you're already in with someone, it's that much easier. And so these are all things that are I would highly recommend. Let your obstetrician gynecologist know that that's in your history. I don't believe that they will hold that against you. I believe that here in Central Ohio, we have phenomenal obstetrician gynecologists who work with psychiatrists all the time in order to help their patients have the best outcomes. Because actually, postpartum depression is the most common complication of childbirth. You know, period, full stop, not obstetrical complications. It's actually postpartum depression is the most common complication. So your obstetrician gynecologist can absolutely be another set of eyes on you, looking out and monitoring you for postpartum depression and anxiety.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about postpartum depression today. You just heard from Dr. Tamar Gurr. She's a women's health expert, a professor and reproductive psychiatrist at Ohio State University's Wexner Medical Center. Also with us, Tanya Fulwider. She's associate director at the Mental Health America of Franklin County and co-founder of POM. Tanya Fulwider, I don't remember when I was pregnant 100 years ago, ever having anyone ever talk about it. I mean, I would imagine what you want people to do is talk about it before it happens, that this is a conversation you ought to be having with, if you have a history, you ought to be having it with your therapist or with your obstetrician, your OBGYN.
Absolutely. Just like Dr. Gurr just said, this is the most common complication of childbirth. Everyone that is in contact with a pregnant woman or a woman that's planning to conceive should be talking about her mental health. Every OBGYN should be screening every single one. They should be screening at set times and then immediately postpartum. Pediatricians should be talking about it because we know that if there's...
That's another portal, another
exactly.
touchstone kind of a thing.
When something is this common, nothing more common, absolutely, every woman should be asked.
It's not, you know, another thing that is unusual is that there isn't even an organization like POM. It's one of very few. It's the only one in Ohio, right? Still, after all these years, it's still the only one in Ohio. Dr. Gurr, what's the issue with that? What does it take?
You know, one of the best things about moving to Ohio was finding POM, I would say, in terms of professionally, because it has reduced so many barriers for me in terms of referring my patients and also just getting them support that they need and getting their husbands the support they need. Their website is just a treasure trove for the entire family, really, in terms of blogs and testimonials and other websites and other links. And so I really felt like I was one of the luckiest perinatal psychiatrist in the world when I came here and found that POM exists. And so we are very lucky here in Central Ohio to have that.
Well, I think just even that your line of work exists.
Yeah.
I didn't know there were perinatal psychiatrists.
Yeah. Well, we're a new and growing field. I think a lot of the problem is that it comes from a place of fear. So I think that psychiatrists, I think that many, not just psychiatrists, but many practitioners are scared of prescribing medications to pregnant women because of black box warning and the FDA. And it's important to note that there's absolutely an evidence-based way to do this. This is now, we have data up to 20 years out that have shown that antidepressant treatment during pregnancy is efficacious. We can help women.
It doesn't hurt the fetus.
There's not an increased risk of things like birth defects. Moms always want to know that. And so I think that, you know, women can feel like they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. And what I tell them each and every time I prescribe one of these medications is that they don't have to white knuckle their way through this and not take a medicine, and that will be better for their baby. They're on the same team as their baby. What's good for them is, in fact, what's good for the baby. And so it doesn't benefit the baby if they don't take anything, if they're suffering from a deep depression or severe anxiety.
Do people who have postpartum depression typically, do they then report that, well, they had a lot of anxiety at the beginning of the pregnancy, too? Is there...
So we call it perinatal depression almost... I almost do that exclusively now because it can really start at any time during the pregnancy and the immediate postpartum and out really to 6 months, or I've seen it develop even further. And so I think sometimes when women say, I was fine till 6 months, what you really do if you ask a very careful history is that there were really signs earlier on. And so what's really important is that this that the woman feels comfortable coming to the attention of her medical providers and her therapists and get the help that they need. I'm much more interested in that.
Yeah. Tanya?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that what's tricky is that, you know, women with mental health issues, particularly in pregnancy, is that if they do have established care with someone who's not a perinatal psychiatrist, is that their psychiatrist will say, oh, well, you're pregnant now. Go see your OBGYN. Mm-hmm. And then your OBGYN says, oh, well, you have mental health issues. I don't do that. Go see your psychiatrist. And they get stuck. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important to work with providers who are educated on that there are so many options, medication, therapy, support groups. And there's no one way, just like there's no one set of symptoms. You heard Angelina talk about intrusive thoughts.
You didn't have those.
Right, right. Absolutely. So it looks so many different ways for so many different women.
And it doesn't always kick in the minute the baby's born or before. It can they can kick in anytime around the first year.
Yeah.
How do you make the connection?
Well, there's the obvious when did you give birth? But again, even when it kicks in later, I often find symptoms that were present before that maybe didn't quite reach a high enough level to draw attention. But it's been very rare the time that I've met someone who says it boom happened like 9 months out. Usually, if you really ask them a lot of questions, you find out that, well, yeah, you know, I did have trouble sleeping the entire pregnancy, but I just thought it was because I was uncomfortable. Yeah, I really didn't have much of an appetite, even though, oh, really, I did have trouble concentrating. Really, I did stop enjoying things way back last summer. So it's really sort of maybe they were sub-threshold, but they were really there.
Well, and that kind of reflects largely on our kind of how we don't self-care when it comes to
100%.
Our mental health. As you know, it's not something you can see, so it's hard to describe.
It's harder to track. It's not like your heart rate, which you can just quickly take a measure and be like, oh, my heart rate's been in the 60s all day. No, it's really much more nuanced than that. And we don't want to see it a lot. You know, we want to, I think we feel such internal pressure and societal pressure to be joyful and to be over the moon and to be ecstatic that anything short of that is sort of unacceptable and difficult. So I think that it can sometimes create barriers to recognizing these symptoms.
And we're conditioned as mothers. We're conditioned to put our needs last. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that. So if I speak up and talk about my own needs in the midst of my pregnancy or this new baby, that's so counterintuitive to what we think the ideal of mom or mother is.
Angelina Spicer also talked about how the trigger for her was her baby crying, which is like, oh, so unfortunate if you have a crying baby. Is that
that's
typical?
Pretty, crying, breastfeeding can trigger some women.
Okay.
They sort of report like when the milk letdown happens, they feel a surge of distressing thoughts or feelings. It can happen all sorts of things. I've had people say that if someone else's baby cries, it sort of triggers these thoughts of like, oh, that baby's crying. Like, I can't help that baby. And it's sort of a spiral of distressing thoughts. And so, and I can't say enough how much sleep deprivation, the stress of having a life dependent on you, this, you know, major transitions we know in terms of just depression and anxiety in general, like going off to college, getting married, retiring. There's a variety of transitions that can really trigger depression and anxiety. But the difficult thing about giving childbirth is, again, this idea that it's supposed to be perfect and joyful. And if it's anything less than that, you're doing it wrong and you're bad.
Listeners, if you have a question or comment, if you've experienced this and want to share, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about postpartum depression today. My guests are Dr. Tamar Gur. She's a women's health expert and professor and reproductive psychiatrist at Ohio State University's Wexner Medical Center. Also with us is Tanya Fulwider. She's associate director at Mental Health America of Franklin County and co-founder of Poem. We'll have a link to Poem as well if you're looking for some help, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about understanding and treating postpartum depression, a condition that affects about 1 in 10 new mothers in the U.S. Still with us is Associate Director at Mental Health America of Franklin County and co-founder of Perinatal Outreach and Encouragement for Moms. It's called POEM, Tanya Fulwider. Women's health expert, professor, and reproductive psychiatrist at the OSU Wexner Medical Center, Dr. Tamar Gur. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The 9th Annual Give Mom the Mic benefit for Poem is coming up. I'll be there. Hope you'll join us. For more information, check the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. The FDA released a first-ever postpartum depression drug, or approved it, I should say. Dr. Gur, what do you make of this?
Yeah, we were actually one of the sites for that trial for Zulresso, or brexanolone is the name of the medication. And so I think overall, it's just exciting that someone is trying something new, and it's been a long time since we had something new to offer moms. And so there's a lot of just a lot of positivity surrounding it, just the fact that there is something new. It works through the GABA receptor. It's thought to work through a GABA receptor, which is an important neurotransmitter in the brain. And what's unique about it is that antidepressants, speaking generally, take about 4 to 6 weeks to work, and this works. We saw scores in the study, scores of depression, with the high score being very depressed. We saw them go down over the course of the 60 hours of the infusion. So it is an IV infusion. It's not a pill you take, though they are working on that. It takes about 60 hours, and you need to be on the inpatient unit during that time. Not necessarily a psychiatric inpatient unit, but an inpatient unit for the transfusion. And the scores went down. And what's exciting from the study is that they were down a month later. So even though the infusion stopped after 60 hours, people's symptoms of postpartum depression were still in remission a month out.
And something else you mentioned off air is that every new mom is screened for depression.
That's right. At the Ohio State Wexner
Medical Center. At Ohio State,
yes, yeah. Every mother. I myself, when I gave birth there less than a year ago, was screened for it, which I really appreciated. I thought it was done really well. And so really the hopes is that we bring, we destigmatize it. We give access to everyone to the attention that they might need. And so I think that it's a really important step forward.
Would that have helped you, Tanya?
Well, had I been screened and recognized Zulresso really targets or brexanolone is severe postpartum depression, and so that I think probably would have helped. And I think when it comes to talking with moms about this treatment, you know, whether it's accessible or not, but being able to help people understand the hormonal component to postpartum depression. You know, it's not just depression that happens to be in postpartum. You know, the your brain chemicals, your hormones radically change when you deliver a baby. And so, you know, Zulresso targets that change. And so being able to have that conversation with moms and families about these huge changes that happen can, I think, alleviate some of that guilt about why am I feeling like mm-hmm. this? Well, because your hormones just went on a huge roller coaster, not like anything you've ever experienced before.
Kim in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Hi, Kim.
Hi. Thank you for this topic. My 28-year-old daughter is, her husband is in the Air Force, and they wanted to start a family, and her military doctor has told her that she needed to go off of her antidepressants, which she's been on since she was in the ninth grade, and her anti-anxiety medication. I have seen a change in her. I was very worried about her. And she recently went through a crisis with a pet, and she's just been dysfunctional. And I don't know how. I tried to bring it up, and she is not wanting to go on the medication because the military doctor told her not to. And I'm wondering how I could maybe, what information I could give her to at least help her make a better informed decision about it.
Dr. Gurr?
Well, first of all, I'm so sorry to hear that that she's struggling right now and that she's lost her pet and that it's hard. That's the last thing you want when you're trying to conceive and start a family. I would recommend, besides going on to poemonline.org, which is Poem's website, there's a wonderful website that's www.womensmentalhealth.org, which is run from the Harvard's Women's Mental Health Program. And they have simply a ton of writing. And I think it's in terms that everyone can understand that really explores and explains how antidepressants during pregnancy can be used without risk to the mom or the developing baby. And there's different, you can sort of explore it in your own time. You as her mother can just sort of give her the link and then she doesn't have to sit there in front of you and do it. It's just she can sort of access it from the comfort of her home and without any pressure on it. But it really provides a wonderful resource and a lot of education about the use of these medications during pregnancy. It's very difficult when someone's direct doctor doesn't feel comfortable with it. But there's many of us out there who absolutely advocate for this and advocate for our women patients being able to successfully use these medications during pregnancy. It doesn't have to be that bad is, I guess, what I would tell her. She doesn't have to suffer. Mm-hmm. She can get help. I think sometimes websites can be a useful way to help people access the information.
Tanya?
There's also a couple apps as well. Great. So depending on her age, there's, I think, mommymeds.com also has a link to an app. And I don't think that's the free one, but there's another one that's free. There's so much information out there. And, I would echo Dr. Gurr that it's really hard when you go to a healthcare professional that is probably not super informed mm-hmm. about how safe medications can be during pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And, of course, not sure what she was taking, but to see a provider who is informed about what her options can be to have both a physically and mentally healthy pregnancy. Yes.
I would always say that a second opinion doesn't hurt. Any
right.
good doctor should feel perfectly comfortable having their patient get a second opinion. And so I would encourage her to do so if possible.
Kim, how far along is your daughter? Hello, Kim.
Yes, I'm there.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, how far along is she?
No, she's not pregnant. They decided that they would start a family and she would. He was literally on deployment for 4 months, so they decided that they would go off.
Okay.
Everything then.
Okay. I see. So she's not even pregnant yet, and Dr. Gurr, I mean, there's no reason why you're saying
I've had many patients have very healthful and happy pregnancies on antidepressants. I've now been doing this long enough that I've seen them through second and third pregnancies on antidepressants. Those kids come and visit me in the office. They're happy. They're healthy. They have great relationship with their parents. And so it's really, it's difficult for me to hear, actually. And if you were here in the studio, you'd see me just sort of covering my eyes.
She's kind of holding her head in
her
hands.
Yeah. Just to hear that this is still something that's actively being told to women out there, it's actually sort of heartbreaking to me, and just teaches me that we need to do a really good job educating this next generation of resident psychiatrists so that when they go out there into the communities, they are not spreading this type of message, because the truth, there's now just dozens of publications and evidence-based practice to support the use of antidepressants, specifically SSRIs like Prozac and other antidepressants, Zoloft, in the use during pregnancy and the postpartum period. And again, no increased risk of birth defects.
Christy in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Christy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a mom of three, four and under. Ooh. So life, things are busy.
Yeah.
But I wanted to share quickly my experience with postpartum thyroiditis. And my my diagnosis of that with my third child. So I had postpartum depression and anxiety with each, in each postpartum period. And I was only recently diagnosed with postpartum thyroiditis. And I was wondering if you had noticed, Dr. Gurr, if you've noticed a correlation with that in your practice. Because I noticed when I started taking thyroid medication, my mood was like night and day difference. My energy was way up. Like it basically cured my postpartum depression, and all it was a thyroid pill.
Hmm. Dr. Gurr?
Yes. So part of a psychiatric workup is making sure there's not an underlying medical cause of symptoms of depression and anxiety. And oftentimes we work closely with the obstetrician gynecologist who are drawing a lot of these labs during pregnancy and postpartum. But if not, then we go ahead and order them as well to make sure that things like your thyroid or you're not anemic, because, you know, low blood hemoglobin can also make someone feel like they don't have a lot of energy. So it's absolutely 100% important to rule out medical causes when we address psychiatric illness, including postpartum depression and anxiety.
Christy, thanks a lot for your call. I appreciate it. And good luck. Four and under. Wow, that's something. I'm wondering, as far as this new drug that's been approved by the FDA, you're talking about 60 hours of intravenous injection of this. And I'm thinking about who really can – not very many people can do that. Does insurance cover it? I have a million questions about that and how – really accessible it is to most women.
Right. And that's the only thing I would say that has tempered the overall enthusiasm, is the fact that it does cost upwards of $30,000. I don't think to date, I might be wrong, and if so, I already apologize ahead of time, that I don't believe insurance covers it yet. And it is very difficult to have 60 hours away from your family, especially in the postpartum. But I would say that it's not just a step, it's a leap in the right direction. And I know that they're working on an oral, a pill form of the medication. And I think that it's one of those things that, if we all put pressures on our insurance companies and ask them to offer it, and if we bring it to the attention of the public and attention, then hopefully we can start getting it covered, because I think that that is a barrier that we need to have removed. But it's a leap in the right direction. Before we didn't even have anything, and now we have something that works. And so I think it's a leap, not a step. And I think that the follow-up will be very important.
I wanted to ask you, too, when it comes to obstetrical complications at birth, so physical complications giving birth, do those tend to lead to a postpartum depression more than not, or can they change the equation?
Sure. So there's a small but significant contribution of obstetrical complications. And it makes sense, right? If you have been planning a natural birth and all of a sudden you're having an emergency C-section, thing did not go the way you have planned. There were scary moments where you didn't know if your child were in danger, if your baby was going to be okay, if you were going to be okay. Absolutely. You can see that's a major stressor, and it makes sense that that contributes. Things like major postpartum hemorrhage can also contribute. If you feel... because you feel incredibly weak, it can be very scary. So they absolutely can contribute. They're not, there's not 100% correlation, but they can contribute to the development.
Mm-hmm. And Tanya Fulwider, how long has POEM been around now?
We found it in 2003.
Okay, so that's 16 years now. Have you noticed the conversations changing at all? As even though there's still not enough attention paid to this, even though there's still a lot we don't know, are you seeing things change?
Oh, absolutely. Just even the fact that we have a medication is really symbolic.
That there's a Dr. Gurr.
If she talks about moving to Ohio being exciting for her, she has no idea what POEM staff were, all the hooting and hollering that happened.
She was a first for you guys, too.
There are not nearly enough Dr. Gurrs out there. She could work like 300 hours a week and would not be enough.
The women in your talk groups and that kind of thing, they're more sophisticated about this. What are you seeing that's changed? As far as
we talk about postpartum depression. When we started POEM, part of the reason that we named it POEM is because it was scary to say the words postpartum depression. A woman would not come to a group that had the name depression in it. And part of that was, a more misunderstanding of the differences between, women who have psychotic illnesses versus women who have depression. That has changed a little bit. We have more people recognizing. We have more OBGYN screening. We have more pediatrician screening. It's still not universal. We have a long way to go. But there's more conversation around it now. And I would say that continues.
From our perspective, there's several of us at Ohio State who specialize in women's mental health. And I would say that it's within the field of psychiatry, it's a growing number of physicians who are interested in it and to whom this field is appealing, because you really have the opportunity to help, not just the mom, but the baby as well. And so it's a very exciting emerging field. There's increasing national conferences for it. There's increasing centers of excellence for it. And so it's absolutely, even since the time I joined the field, it's been blossoming, and that's been very exciting as well. And so there's several of us. And again, we're sort of trying to train the next generation so that when they go out, you don't have to specialize in reproductive psychiatry or perinatal psychiatry in order to treat it well. And so just increasing other psychiatrists and other health providers awareness of it, and so that they can also identify and treat it appropriately, is a major goal.
What if it is not treated? Mm-hmm. What's the end game?
So, in the very worst case scenarios, it's death. So, suicide is one of the top ways that a woman dies after childbirth, and that's tragic and heartbreaking and never okay. And then the other more common side effects is it can affect the whole family. Just the dynamic of the family can change. It can become stressful for the partner and for the children. The mom's attachment to the baby can be hampered. I don't want anyone listening to think that they've ruined their baby if they had postpartum depression. You absolutely have not. That's just all the more reason that getting help is important. If you can't find it in you to do it for yourself, hopefully maybe you can find it in you to do it for your baby, because it'll actually benefit them as well, in terms of their your interactions with them and their relationship.
Do you find men seeking, or I suppose spouses, partners? It's not, maybe not always men. It's just whoever else is there leading the household. Is that an issue, Tanya?
I mean, we know that partner depression is slightly, less common, but it still exists. If you're feeling like something's not right and you have, you're expecting a baby or you have a new baby in the house, reach out, whoever you are, whether you're the, main caregiver or there's someone else, helping,
Right. So while fathers might not have the hormonal fluctuation that Tanya described so well, they certainly have a lot of the other transitions in terms of sleep deprivation, increased pressure, it could be financially, increased demands emotionally. They too can experience symptoms of depression, anxiety after the birth of a child. And so, one of those put on your oxygen masks first situations can happen, where if they're not functioning well, their ability to support the mom and baby unit will also be negatively affected. So absolutely, dads should also seek out help. And we basically need to support our families more as a nation, as a society. And so absolutely, there's no harm and only benefit to seeking out help more during that time.
Dr. Tamar Gur, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Dr. Tamar Gur is a women's health expert, professor, and reproductive psychiatrist at Ohio State University's Wexner Medical Center. Tanya Fulwider is associate director at Mental Health America of Franklin County and co-founder of POEM. Tanya, thanks as always for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ann.
And you should join us at the 9th annual Give Mom the Mic benefit for POEM coming up. I'll be there. You hope you'll be there. For more information, check the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.